Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Still, this morning, no final word on who's won the presidential election.
We're not making any projections in Ohio other than to project that it's too close to call right now. We learned a lesson from 4 years ago, and I think...
John Kerry and I made a promise to the American people that in this election, every vote would count and every vote would be counted.
This all adds up to a convincing Electoral College victory, as well as a strong endorsement of President Bush by his fellow Americans in the popular vote. President Bush decided to give Senator Kerry the respect of more time to reflect on the results of this election. The president will be making a statement later today.
And we will bring you those remarks and any other developments as they come over the course of our program today. We'd also like to hear from you. What do you think? Is this election over? Are you ready to hear the president claim victory and to hear John Kerry concede? Or do you want to wait until every provisional vote, every absentee ballot in Ohio and any other closely contested state are counted to make sure that there are none of those questions that still haunt the last election? Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We have a number of guests joining us this hour. First, though, a chance to check in with the voters. Last night, thousands of them stood in a light rain in downtown Boston. The Democrats watching CNN on a large screen, straining for any shred of good news.
All right, we have another projection. I'm going to interrupt and go over here because CNN can now project after all of these hours that John Kerry will carry the state of New Hampshire. This is the state.
But as the evening wore on, Democrats like Jennifer Roberts of Hingham began to lose hope.
I don't know, and I'm really scared for what's going to happen either way with the outcome of this election, because I feel like we're a nation terribly divided, and that really worries me. I'm very troubled by that.
What do you think might happen? What do you when you think ahead?
It's going to be very, very hard for us to come together again as a nation. I think we're divided more than we ever have been in my lifetime anyway.
We're going to start today with our party strategist looking at what lies or what should lie ahead. Rick Davis is with the Republican Party. Elaine Kmark is a Democrat, and they're both joining us on the phone. Thanks for giving us some of your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Elaine, what's next? What do you hear?
Well, I think what's next is pretty clear. I think we simply should take a little bit of time and make sure that every vote is counted. One of the things you just can't tell on election night is the full picture. And I think we need to look at the full picture in Ohio. Now, it obviously looks pretty good for the president because he has about 130,000 vote margin. But we don't have a firm grip on the provisional ballots yet. 4 years ago, most of those provisional ballots ended up being counted. And I would think, frankly, that it's in George Bush's interest to be a little patient here. And I think that was actually the tenor of the remarks from his spokesman that we just heard. Mm-hmm. Because, in fact, it's better for his presidency if instead of 4 years ago, there's a feeling that this was legitimately won.
Okay, Rick Davis, how much patience is there in the Republican Party?
Well, I think that they're celebrating in the streets now. I mean, I think you can look at the results when you wake up this morning and pretty much count on the fact that George Bush has been reelected for 4 more years, and in some cases, handily. You look at the 3 million vote spread on the popular vote. That's a significant change from the situation we had 4 years ago where the popular vote and the electoral vote didn't jive. You look at some of the key states that were troublemakers last cycle, Florida, you know, handily win by George Bush. And so I think these are the kinds of sort of very positive indicators that this thing is about to be wrapped. But I do think we're entering a period in elections in our country that you may just not be able to tell who the winners and losers are, you know, in the way we've done before, which is, you know, by, you know, the end of the evening or the day of the election and being able to get the networks to call the election. I think everybody was very responsible.
So what are you saying, Rick, that maybe the prudent thing is to wait a day or two or 11 if that's what's required to get all these votes counted?
Well, I do think the clock is ticking on this one. I mean, Elaine points out that, you know, Bush has a 130,000 vote lead in Ohio, and there are only 150,000 provisional ballots. Well, you know, you can do the math. I mean, that's probably a bit of an uphill fight for John Kerry to win so many provisional ballots that it puts him back in the lead in Ohio. So I think that you know, the Kerry campaign is going to take the time that the Bush campaign has given it to consider its options. And I think that, frankly, it's important for the Kerry campaign, I would say, to do the right thing at this stage, and that is to walk the walk that Kerry was talking about during the campaign and start thinking about national unity and not, you know, their party survival at this stage.
Okay, Rick and Elaine, I want to ask the two of you to just hang on for half a second while I bring in my other two guests for the balance of the hour. Tom Patterson's here with me in the Boston studio. He's a professor of government and the press at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. Tom, it's good to have you here.
Good morning, Dick.
And Walter Shapiro is joining us as well from a studio in New York City. He's a political columnist for USA Today. Hi, Walter.
Hello.
So what, Walter, do you think is the next proper step? Is the Democratic Party postponing the inevitable here?
Probably. That said, if the people making the decisions in the Kerry camp are as tired as I am, who is coming on this broadcast on 2 hours sleep, I think clear thinking is not exactly easy to obtain right now. And the two things to remember are there is no constitutional deadline that we're coming up on for getting this resolved. It is very nice and neat that we like to have headlines in the morning saying who the next president is. But the electors meet in December. The votes are counted in January.
There is time, is what you're saying. Walter, Elaine's got a dash here, so if I can just interrupt, I want to put one more, Elaine, to you before you go. Politics does intervene here. I mean, you're really not going to be able to sit there and count every single vote at some point. Political pressure is going to build for that kind of decision, right?
Well, except that what you're looking at in Ohio is, frankly, not that many ballots. You're not looking at, as we were in Florida 4 years ago, a total statewide recount. You're looking at the question of these provisional ballots. And remember that provisional ballots are brand new for the 2004 election cycle in terms of being nationally mandated. And it's probably a good thing if we take them seriously, establish some precedents, learn something about them, because we'll be better situated for 4 years from now. So I don't think, I think this will be over probably quicker than it was 4 years ago, but I do think we have a lot of reasons to take our time on this.
Okay, Elaine, I thank you for being with us. I know you have to go. Rick, if you can stay with us just a bit longer, I want to turn to Tom Patterson here in the studio. What should happen next, Tom? You're listening to the two different sides here. What do you think?
Well, I think we do have some time, as Elaine suggested, but at some point, good sense and a touch of grace, I think, should come into the process. And, you know, once they know how many provisional ballots they are, and once they've confirmed the unofficial count, you know, if the mathematical likelihood is so remote, you know, then I think it's time for Kerry to step forward and concede.
Is there some kind of imperative here when it comes to making sure that this country is very clear about who the leader is and who makes the decisions when we contemplate the possibility of a 10-day wait or an 11-day wait, if that's what it would take legally in Ohio to get to all those to counting all those provisional ballots?
Well, that's what the Ohio officials say. It would take maybe 10 or 11 days to get the count done. But certainly before the count was completed, if we're talking about, let's say, 150,000 provisional ballots, and we've got Bush with 130 to 135,000 vote lead at this point, we don't have to count all of them to sort of really understand sort of what the outcome is going to be. So my sense is that a day doesn't matter. It's hard to imagine that it would take the full 10 or 11 days. And then at some point, you know, you look at this as from the Kerry Edwards perspective. And, you know, I think there is something to be said for good sense and grace at this moment. And I think everybody has a sense that we need to heal as a nation. This has been a very divisive campaign. I think it's a bit optimistic to think that those wounds are going to heal very quickly, but it has to start somewhere, and I think it starts, you know, with a graceful concession. Very much as I think, as difficult as that month was after Florida in 2000, Al Gore's graceful concession speech, I think, really helped the transition ultimately.
And Rick Davis, I'm just wondering if, as you contemplate the day ahead or the days ahead, we've seen protocol broken in this election. If that concession doesn't come, can you imagine a circumstance under which President Bush would claim victory anyway?
Sure. I think that if the Kerry campaign takes a litigious approach to the resolution of this campaign, I think it's fully in George Bush's not only rights, but I think appropriate to define this election on his terms. And that is, look, people have spoken. I have a 3 million vote margin on the national surveys, and other than lawsuits, nothing has kept the people in Ohio or Florida or any other close state from voting. You know, there isn't irregularity that's been a hallmark of the 2000 election. And let's move on and declare victory. And, I mean, Andy Card, you know, in essence, did so last night. You know, their reading of the results in Ohio were clear. You know, they believe they've won. Someone has to prove that they didn't. If these provisional ballots are the only thing left on the table to deal with, I think you can pretty much safely assume, as has been pointed out, that it's unlikely for Senator Kerry to catch up with that few votes left available.
And just setting aside the question over the president for a minute, if we look at the way that the Republicans have seized the majority in the Senate, confirmed their majority in the House, if we look at it overall, including the popular vote that you mentioned, can you see a Republican administration moving faster, moving more aggressively with its policies once this is settled, assuming it's settled for the president?
Yeah, definitely. You know, anytime you're a lame duck president, you only have a very small window to try and move a four-year agenda through Congress. And the reality is that President Bush does look like he's going to have a bigger margin in the Senate, a solid margin in the House, to be able to effectuate these changes. But as you know, it doesn't take but one senator to gum up the works in the Senate. And so I think there will be a bit of a honeymoon for Bush. I think the election was definitive enough that that once the concessions are made and the victory speech is given, he will have a window of opportunity to promote an agenda that he wants to institute for the next 4 years. And I think that the Congress will support that as long as he does his best, and I think he will, because it's what we've heard all through the campaign, to reach across the aisle and bring in Democrats and Republicans alike to promote these policies.
Rick, I thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Rick Davis is a strategist with the Republican Party. And Walter Shapiro, I'm going to ask you a snappy question because we're coming right up to a break. But it seems to me, listening to Rick, that the 2 hours sleep you got last night may be more of a norm than for the next little while. It sounds like things are going to stay pretty busy.
Absolutely. In fact, when I got up at 8:30 this morning, the first thing I did, remembering Tallahassee in 2000, is I booked a hotel room in Columbus, Ohio for next week just in case.
Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. Connection listeners, we'd like to hear from you about what you think is the appropriate next move. Are the Democrats on firm footing to say, wait a second, we're going to count every vote counts? Do the Democrats have to think about the political imperative and the likelihood that maybe there'll have to be a concession before that work is done? And what would you counsel President Bush to do? To press ahead, as Rick Davis says, or to wait until that concession comes from the Democratic Party? Is this about healing after the election, or is this about moving quickly and forcefully ahead? Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. All right, listeners, it's fairly simple at this point and still fairly dramatic. Is it time for a concession and a victory speech, or is it time for more counting? 1-800-423-8255. We're going to take two callers at the same time here and see what we're hearing from our listeners. I want to bring Pamela in. She's calling in from Greenville, North Carolina. Hi, Pamela.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. And Craig's joining us as well from Virginia Beach, Virginia. Hi, Craig.
Hi, how are you doing today?
I'm fine. Craig, I'm going to ask you to start here. What do you think's the appropriate next move?
I think the winner should win with dignity, and the loser should lose with dignity. And in saying that, I'm sure that Kerry has experts around him that are telling him the statistical improbability of him winning. And in knowing that, I think that he should go ahead and concede and let us get on with the business of the country.
What do you think, Pamela?
I don't think this is a winner situation or a loser situation. This is just American voting system. I think that if people go out to vote, their vote should feel like they should feel like their vote is being counted. And I think, you know, from today, I've had 2-3 people to come up to me and say, you know, I don't think I'm going to vote again because I don't think my vote matters. And, you know, we should take every step that there is to make sure that the American people feel like their vote really counts.
Even if it's a week or 2-week wait there, Pamela?
Even if it's a week or 2 weeks, because it deters people from wanting to vote. It makes people feel like their vote does not count at all.
Last one from you there, Craig.
I've heard that quite a bit, and I would say that their vote will be counted. Every vote will be counted. They've been doing it all night long. In the district, I'll just say one of the big percentages in the District of Columbia, Kerry won by like 90%. Well, they hadn't counted all the votes. They just knew that statistically, Kerry had won. And this is what has happened. We know statistically that Bush has won, and the votes will be counted.
All right, Craig, I'm going to stop you there. Thank the two of you, Craig and Pamela, for being with us and take a bit of a breath here and have Tom and Walter help us a little bit with statistically just exactly what we do know. What are the numbers telling us? Are we really so close that we ought to be taking this pause? What's new in these numbers, Tom?
Well, you know, Craig has a point. You know, last night nearly every state was called before the votes were fully counted. You know, and the margin of victory was so substantial that even if all of the votes had gone the other way, it wouldn't have changed the outcome. And, you know, I think we've got to look at Ohio through that lens. And one of the problems is that we've heard varying numbers out of Ohio as to how many votes are still outstanding. I've heard as high as 250,000 and as low as 150,000.
Right.
And if it's as low as 150,000 and they're provisional ballots, not all of those ballots will be upheld as legitimate, so they won't even be counted. And then you think, okay, you know, Kerry's got to get 98%, 99% of these things to be able to turn it around. I mean, there's a point at which you do the numbers and you say it's impossible. And I think at that point, when they're pretty confident that that's in fact what's out there, then you quit. But my guess is that they're not confident about that.
Right.
No one has a really firm count on the numbers. And we know from Florida in 2000, we were talking about this number of absentee ballots at this point on Wednesday morning. And then the number changed. So these numbers can change. And, you know, I think we need a little firmer fix. Once we have that fix, then I think we know what the next step should be.
And, Walter, you were probably watching some of the television coverage of this last night. I was fascinated to hear different anchors saying that they were getting calls from the president's people saying, would you please make a decision on this state or that state, because then we can make a statement. And I'm wondering if the way that we're looking at the election today isn't in large part a bit of being too careful in the wake of what happened in Florida.
Well, I don't think it is at all. And let me just go through a couple of things. I spent a lot of time in Columbus, Ohio during the late lamented campaign. And a couple of things should be known. Number one, Secretary of State Ken Blackwell of Ohio is running for governor in 2006. He is a politically divisive figure in Ohio politics as a very ardent African-American social conservative, and that there has been a number of controversies going up to the election surrounding some of the decisions that he made, including the initial decision that provisional ballots had to be cast in the precinct in which you should be voting. That said, as Tom Patterson pointed out, we got so many inaccurate but very seriously debated on television and on the radio and the press reports out of Florida in 2000. And I think a certain level of caution, since provisional ballots are decentralized and it is the counties which are reporting to the Secretary of State's office, that let us take a breath, let us wait until we get a number of how many provisional ballots out there. And also, we have to remember, if Bush is indeed the president, which seems like about a 97% probability, it isn't like Bush has to go through a transition. So it isn't like the clock is running on some sort of major governmental handover.
Let me, if I can, stop you there, Walter, because we've got Stephen Koff on the line. He is joining us from Cleveland, Ohio. He is the Washington Bureau Chief for the Cleveland Plain Dealer. And, Stephen, thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Good morning.
Can you shine any light on what's happening in Ohio today? Do we have any idea how many provisional ballots they are? Have things moved since last night?
We have an idea of what we don't know. I suppose that's movement in some way. There are about 135,000-plus provisional ballots in 77 of Ohio's 88 counties, but that means we don't know how many there are in 10 counties, and three of those counties are urban, somewhat populous areas, Lucas County, which is the Toledo area, Mahoning,
right,
which is the Youngstown area, and Summit, which is Akron. They've not reported how many that they have.
How long before we're likely to know that, Steve?
Great question. I don't know. Ken Blackwell intends to have a conference call this afternoon with, I believe, his 88 boards of election throughout the state and talk it over with them.
Do you agree with Walter's perspective here that the Democrats may, in fact, be wise to be careful about taking what Ken Blackwell, Secretary of State in Ohio, says on face value because he has a record of taking a rather partisan side to his duties in that state?
Yeah, Blackwell has to wear two hats in this regard. One, he's constitutionally charged to uphold the election law in Ohio, and we've seen no evidence that he's not doing that job. On the other hand, he does aspire to become governor. He's had lots of disagreements and disputes with other state office holders, and a lot of these have had to do with what do we count, what don't we count, when do we count them, when do we get around to counting them. And so that, if viewed through a political lens, I can see certainly state Democrats having grounds to be cautious.
Steve, one quick one for you, because I know it's such a busy day for you, and that is just from the perspective from Cleveland this morning. Are people sort of still a little bit in shock that their state has become the Florida of 2004?
They're absolutely. They're dazed. They're confused. They're saying, oh, my God, here we go. And, you know, they're watching reporters checking into hotels and flying in, and operatives from parties saying, gee, I'm buying a one-way ticket, and I'm not sure how long I'm staying.
Steve, thanks for being with us.
Sure, thank you.
Steve Koff, Washington Bureau Chief there for the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Next to Maynard, Massachusetts, and Max on the line. Hi, Mac, what do you think?
Well, a lot of things. One of the things that I'm calling about is to take issue with the astonishing arrogance of your first Republican guest there to suggest that the Bush campaign has any authority to be giving the Kerry campaign time to do anything. As far as I understand it, it's a question of law, whether or not these ballots get counted and what time is available to do it in.
Well, Rick Davis went further than that. He said if that concession is not forthcoming, as far as he's concerned, and he's only one person and he's a strategist, as far as he's concerned, the president could go ahead and claim victory anyway. You're saying that's against the law.
Well, the president can claim all manner of things, as he's been doing for 4 years, but I believe that the Constitution and the election law governs what happens at this stage.
Tom Patterson, what do you know about this? Can you shine a little light on this for us?
Well, you know, Mac is right. I mean, this idea of conceding, you know, that's just a norm. There's nothing in law about conceding. It has no official status. It doesn't change the outcome of the election. We're talking about the vote count, and, you know, the Kerry camp can do what it will do, and the same for the Bush people. So the Bush people can, in fact, claim victory if they would like. But I think, again, I think good sense has to prevail here. I mean, we went through a very difficult time in 2000 with Florida, and somehow we've got to slow down just enough to find out what the situation in Ohio is. And then once the handwriting is on the wall in one direction or another, you know, do the count fully to the last vote, or it's not mathematically possible, then I think both camps have to step up and do the right thing. I think the American public deserves that at this point.
Walter Shapiro, you're probably our resident expert on campaign protocol here. Things are already starting to be changed here. This idea that the candidates shouldn't campaign on voting day. Well, they both did that. Does that mean protocol's out the window? It's got that nasty?
Well, I think it's gotten this nasty in so many different arenas. For example, One of the reasons why the Republicans strengthened their hold on the House of Representatives is that Texas Republicans under House Majority Leader Tom DeLay violated the protocol, which had to govern both parties, that you don't redistrict in the middle of a decade for partisan advantage. But that's just what they did in Texas. So the idea that there's these Marcus of Queensbury rules that still exist in this time of political polarization strikes me as a little comic. And I also find it a little comic that somehow what the Bush was waiting for was the networks to flash the new president and do their own sort of network confetti drop before he could claim victory. Basically, anyone can claim victory. I could go out there and claim I'm the next president of the United States. But the point is, the question is, do these claims have credibility?
Right.
Obviously, Bush can go out there and claim that he was reelected with high credibility. It would strain credulity for John Kerry to go out there and say, we won. But it is conceivable that John Kerry could go out there and say, I think we should take a day or two under the provisions of the new Voting Act, which, by the way, President Bush signed into law, and wait for an accurate number of the provisional ballots and for enough of the count to continue. By the way, because the provisional ballots also cover local issues in Ohio, they will be counted whether they have a bearing on the presidential election or not.
Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. We'd like to have you join our conversation this hour about what should happen next on this day of indecision after the voting day. Jonathan Regis went out last night to see if he could hear John Kerry speak in downtown Boston, maybe a concession speech, maybe a victory speech. Instead, he left wondering what the rest of the world will think about the likely reelection of George Bush.
The rest of the world is just going to, like, withdraw from the U.S. in a way. Even here in this country, like, you know, half of the country you see is, like, you know, against Bush. But, like...
And half is for him.
But you see, it's not... He's not really going to look at it and be like, yo, well, you know, I need... Maybe, you know, I need to reach out to those, that other half. It's just going to be like, let me stick to, you know, the way I'm going because I know I'm right or whatever.
We're going now to St. Catharines in Canada. Stephen's joining us on the line from there. Stephen, you had a chance to hear Jonathan kind of scratching his head over the way the rest of the world will watch this. How are you watching what's happening here today?
I'm also scratching my head, but I'd also like to echo the previous comments that there should be no rush on the part of the Democratic Party to offer a concession. If they were to do so, I think that would impose a tenor on the urgency of counting the provisional votes, and I really think that the time should be taken. As somebody from the international community, I feel a little bit, I don't know, for lack of a better word, terror, thinking of another 4 years of Bush administration. I don't know why a majority of American people weren't able to understand that the terminology global test simply meant diplomacy, and why American people weren't willing to have a leader who would want to engage in diplomacy.
Well, I think that your questions about wondering what people felt are questions that are being asked on both sides here. Bush supporters asking that about Democrats and Kerry supporters asking that about Republicans. I don't know, Tom, at this point, whether or not taking into account the way that the election is seen around the world is a significant feature. What do you think?
Oh, no, I think it is significant. You know, after 2000, and if the world's foremost democracy conducted that kind of election again, I think that sends a powerful and devastating signal to the rest of the world about the state of American democracy. I don't think it's going to happen this time, so that the way that we conducted ourselves this time, I think, is important in terms of world opinion. And we know also that... you know, if the rest of the world's democracies had been able to vote in this election, it would have been a landslide for John Kerry. That's no secret. There are only a few democracies, India being one of them, where the opinion polls showed that the general public would have preferred the election of George W. Bush. So, you know, I think where we are in the world is an important part of this election. I think it's the second story. I mean... you know, the first take always on election night is who won, and
right.
and that's that's a national American story. But, you know, there is an international element to this election that's quite unusual and important.
And Walter, when we go back through the data provided by the exit polls, we can see that close to 20% of the people who cast ballots marked terrorism as their number one concern. And of that group, over 85% of them voted for Bush instead of John Kerry. How do you make sense of that number?
Well, first of all, I have a new skepticism about the reasons why people tick off reasons why they cast their vote on an exit poll, because I was exit polled in New York. And I was confronted with just that question. What was the single reason why you voted? And I don't, you know, most people don't think in those nice, convenient cubbyholes that pollsters like. And therefore, I'm a little more skeptical of looking at the exit polls as the only data we have as sort of tablets from Mount Sinai,
right,
because I was exit polled.
What did you say?
That, well, I actually, to give you an idea of how shallow my answer was, I'm not sure I remember. and which is another way, you have to realize that these exit polls are people who are in a hurry,
yep,
standing up outside in some places in the rain, that these are not, shall we say, reflective, deliberative moments in one's life. I, for example, checked the wrong box on the question on whether or not I belong to a labor union. So the point is, however, that one of the great predictors of how people would vote are the two Iraq questions on the exit polls. Number one, do you approve of the decision to go into Iraq? And that tracked totally with Bush and Kerry votes.
All right, Connection listeners, our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. Just a reminder for you, we are expecting word from both the Kerry and the Bush camps at some point, perhaps during this hour or the next one. If we get that, we will bring it to you as soon as we have word of it, and we'll bring you the words of people in those camps if they are changing the situation. In the meantime, a chance to look at the numbers that we do have and the questions before the parties. Is this time for a concession and a victory speech, or is this time for pause and a little more careful counting? 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection this hour. We're taking a look at the political situation at this moment with the Democrats and the Republicans trying to figure out what comes next, whether or not the provisional votes in Ohio are going to end up being as key a part of this election as the hanging chads were in Florida in the year 2000. We have already heard from a couple of Democrats, Kerry supporters, and listened to their different ideas of what lies ahead. Robert D. Smith is one of the Bush supporters who's expecting all this to turn into a victory for the president. Robert D. Smith's from Texarkana, Texas. He says the best man won, and that Bush is simply a good guy with good values.
I think he's a good guy. He's got, like, good, solid values. Sometimes he messes up on his speech, but he gets his point across, you know. I think he's, like, comes from a really good background. I think his family's, like, really a good, solid family. And he supports, like, family values. Going back to good values that make America, you know.
Do you think George Bush has to do anything to try and reach out to these Democrats, the people who are working and voting against him?
Yeah, I think that's going to be like a coming together at the parties, and everybody's going to try to come to some consensus, because George Bush is going to be in there for another 4 years. But
so it's time to get used to him all over again.
Right. So everybody's just got to make do, I guess.
It's Robert D. Smith from Texarkana, Texas. A reminder that with me in the studio, Tom Patterson, professor of government at Harvard's Kennedy School, and Walter Shapiro is joining us from a studio in New York City. He writes a political column for USA Today. I don't want to go back too much, Walter, to this question of what popped up in the exit polls, but there's a lot of talk that people made up their minds based on moral values in this particular election, perhaps more than anybody anticipated. What do you think?
Well, I will admit that I was a little stunned that Bush seems to have increased his margins in the rural counties of Ohio over 2000. And that is why Bush is, despite unprecedented Democratic voter registration efforts, get-out-the-vote efforts, canvassing efforts, it is why he has the six-digit margin at the moment. So I even spent some time in Pentecostal churches looking for this upsurge in the social conservative votes. And, you know, clearly Karl Rove knew something. Bush's political guru knew something about increasing vote margins in rural areas. But in so many different ways, all of the red-blue cultural divides that we've talked about until they become boring beyond belief cliches are here as much as possible. And it seems like for every new 26-year-old Starbucks barista, Kerry-loving, former Howard Dean-loving new voter brought into the system, there is also a rural voter who might work in an insurance agency, attend an evangelical church, consider gay marriage to be a sin, and can and really look at George W. Bush as someone who upholds moral and religious values like his or her own.
All right, let me turn to Tom here, if I can, Walter, because the expectation was that this election would bring out a lot of new voters. Now, it did that, did it not?
It did on both sides. And, you know, to pick up on Walter's point about the exit polling, the earlier point, you know, if you look at the exit polls and people who cited moral values as their primary issue, you know, I think the Bush vote in that group was 80% to 90%. But I think this is an example of the pitfalls of exit polling. You know, moral values is not a term that Democratic voters use to justify their vote. So in some ways, it's almost self-fulfilling. But at the same time, I think the Democrats for the last two decades have really underestimated the power of moral values as a political issue. And
by that, do you mean the power of the evangelical vote for someone like President Bush? You're talking about something broader than that.
I am talking about something broader than that. There was a nice piece in the paper this morning called, you know, Living Poor, Voting Rich. And there are a lot of relatively low-income Americans who are voting Republican, and they're voting Republican primarily around these cultural values. I mean, that's in some ways has been the way that the Republicans have made inroads, both among the rural poor and the urban poor, is to, you know, tap these issues of family and, you know, all that related set of issues that we talk about as moral values or cultural values. And, you know, this is a fairly powerful issue. And, you know, if you're talking about the resurgence of the Republican Party over the last 20 years, this certainly has to be right at the center of any analysis of that.
All right. Let's go back to the phones to Bangor, Maine. Mike's joining us from there. Hello, Mike.
Good morning.
Who did you vote for, if you don't mind me asking?
I don't mind at all, because that's one of my points. First of all, let me say that I think that John Kerry should take the high road. If he's an officer and gentleman as he professes to be, he should concede graciously and spare the country a lot of angst. But as to who I voted for in an election in which it said that every vote should count, I voted for George Bush, and my vote was just callously discarded when I woke up this morning and heard that Maine, our four whopping electoral votes, went to John Kerry. So where does my vote count in that process when the Electoral College, in the most important of the offices in the country, my vote counted for everything except the presidential election because of the Electoral College, and I think it should be abolished before the next presidential election.
I think we'll spend time on that on another program, but Mike, quickly before I let you go, why did you vote for President Bush? We were talking just before I went to you about the way that his talk of moral values brought a lot of people to his side in this election. Did it have anything to do with your vote?
Well, actually, two things had to do with my vote. One was that he was here in Bangor on Air Force One ready to go. I know how tight his schedule is, and every moment is choreographed. He saw another aircraft sitting on the ramp here in Bangor, asked who it was told it was a charter flight containing military troops, and his whole schedule went out the window as he went out the door and spent over an hour on that airplane talking to the soldiers.
Yeah, I remember that.
And that was just an extremely touching thing for me to think that he would just throw, you know, he has to know what the scheduling is, and it was more important. That was the most important thing to him right then in the world, was to go talk to those troops on that airplane, and I was touched by that. And the other thing was, it came down to, I could not envision Theresa Hines Carey as First Lady. Laura Bush is, in my mind, the quintessential First Lady, so those two factors are what triggered my already prejudiced vote.
Mike, I thank you for your call. I'm going straight across now.
I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you.
All right, to Louisville, Kentucky next. Jeannie's on the line. Hi, Jeannie.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. What do you think?
Well, my feeling is, when these elections have become so close, especially the last election and this election, that they should come up with a standard that any state that has a percent of the, you know, that's like within that margin of error or too close to call,
yeah,
they should just make it mandatory that they are going to hold that particular vote as too close to call until every absentee ballot and provisional ballot is counted. And whether that takes 2 weeks or 4 weeks, at least those people aren't going out of line thinking my vote doesn't count, or you don't feel like your vote doesn't count, and you feel more assured that your vote does count. And
I know there are some countries, Jeannie, that say if the vote is within a certain percentage point, it's an automatic recount. Is that what you're talking about,
yeah,
as well?
An automatic recount, or at least wait until, you know, people, I understand people saying Kerry should go ahead and concede, but those very people, if Bush was on the other end, would say, let's wait and count, you know, if they're Bush supporters. So it goes both ways. And I think that there should be an automatic recount, or at least, at the very least, wait until every absentee ballot. But when it's in the line of margin,
yeah,
you know, it's our president for the next 4 years. What's it hurt to wait and do a recount?
I got you on that one, Jeannie. Thank you for your call. And Tom, it brings up a point that we haven't talked about, because we focused specifically on the 136,000 vote plurality that Bush enjoys over Kerry in Ohio right now, and the likelihood that there are at least that many, and perhaps not that many more provisional ballots, and what are the statistics, what's the statistical likelihood that, in fact, it would make a difference. But when you stop and when you pause in an election like this, a lot of other things come out of the woodwork. There are people who say, well, I didn't have a chance to do this. Or this group of people says, well, what happened to our votes? And things can start to spin at this point, though, can they not?
Well, again, I think the lesson of 2000 is be careful. And, you know, when it could affect the outcome, you know, you count every vote, every legal vote. And, you know, I think we learned that lesson, but you can carry it too far, obviously.
Right.
You know, we'll just have to see. I think within 48 hours, my guess is, we'll have a pretty good idea of whether there's any possibility of reversing what looks to be the outcome in Ohio. And if there's no chance, then I would expect the Kerry Edwards people to step forward.
Walter, do you think that there will be other states? I'm looking at, you know, really close races in Iowa, Nevada, New Mexico, Wisconsin, where the two sides there could be saying, hey, while Ohio is busy, you know, trying to figure stuff out, we're going to have a close and careful second look at what happened here.
I think it's quite possible, since this was, if Bush, you know, had lost in Florida in 2000, they were going to challenge New Mexico, where I think Gore had won about 400 or 500 votes. So, I mean, this is all the part of the breakdown of any sort of civil discourse between the two parties, mm-hmm, in this country. But it also, you know, brings home just the whole sense that, once again, there is something amazing about an election where right now one state has definitively changed political allegiance from 2000, and that's New Hampshire. So, I mean, the fact is that we are so locked in to this divided America, and it is a polarized America, and I really think that passions are really going to run high. Particularly, even though there's no legal point here, the stories that people waiting 8, 10, 12 hours to vote in Ohio, which I think was just due to the chronic underfunding of voting in this country. Never enough workers or machines.
I end up with so much admiration for those people who will wait 5, 6, 7 hours to vote. That is, in many ways, the ultimate expression of the embrace of democracy. I want to take, Walter, if I can, one of the points that you were making and put it to my next caller. Davis is joining us now on the line from Oxford, North Carolina. Hi, Davis.
Hey, how are you?
I'm fine. I wonder if you're also concerned, as Walter is, about this bitterness, this divide that seems now to be coming a sort of fixture of American politics.
Yes, I'm very worried about it, but I think the divide has always been there. I think that I did not vote my pocketbook. And we say down here in Granville County, nobody votes their pocketbook because there's nobody in the county rich enough to vote Republican.
So what did you base your decision on?
Leadership. Not changing horses in the middle of the stream. But I'm very, very afraid of the evangelical right.
But...
And I think that people don't understand, especially down here in the Bible Belt, that there are simply certain things like being against gay marriage that's just a simple given.
This is an interesting point, Davis. I thank you for your call. And, Tom, we're near the end of the program. So are we going to see, assuming that Bush's presidency is confirmed at some point, are we going to see a battle within the Republican Party about just who controls that in a way that Davis is expressing, where he's happy to vote for Bush and not too happy with some of the other people who did?
Well, I think there are some tensions in the Republican Party, but in some ways that party is saved a bit by this political system. If you think about this grouping that's the Republican Party with the economic conservatives and the social conservatives, most of the issues of social conservatism work themselves out at the state and local level. Most of the issues of the economy work themselves out at the national level. So the Republican Party at least has a little bit of a luxury of doing one thing with federal policy and then another thing with state law and local ordinance. And I think it's buffered them a little bit to this point. But as that party gets stronger and stronger, as it has been over the last 20 years, then those tensions are going to come out.
Maybe we're beginning to see that. It's, as you say, a little early to tell and a little early to know exactly what the results of today will be. We are going to stay on this story, and you will too. Tom, I want to thank you for being with us. Tom Patterson, professor of government and the press at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government, and Walter Shapiro, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Walter is a political columnist for USA Today. Earlier in the program, we talked with Rick Davis, who is a strategist with the Republican Party. Elaine K. Mark does the same thing for the Democrats. Steve Koff is Washington bureau chief for the Cleveland Plain Dealer. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.